is the best of the Albert Mueller Program. We won't be taking your phone calls today, but stay tuned for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mueller is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mueller.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mueller Program. It is Friday, May 20, 2005, and it's commencement season around America. I'll be at Union University in Jackson, Tennessee tomorrow delivering the commencement address to a wonderful group of graduates. And in Michigan, President George W. Bush will be delivering the commencement address at Calvin College, but not without some controversy. This comes as a surprise to many people, but it looks like one-third of the faculty of Calvin College has taken out an advertisement in the local newspaper protesting President Bush's role in speaking at the commencement. Now, on the official website for Calvin College, President Galen Biker says, "It is a great honor to have the President of the United States speak at Calvin. By virtue of his position, he is undoubtedly one of the most influential people in the world. We want our students to leave this place challenged and motivated to renew God's world in whatever they do. For our graduates to hear from President Bush as they prepare to leave Calvin and make a difference in the world is an extraordinary opportunity for them. The presence of President Bush will certainly make this a commencement that students, parents, and the Calvin community will remember for years to come." Well, President Biker, it looks like at least a third of your faculty is acting in a way that many people beyond Calvin College are going to remember this commencement for a long time to come. Now, what strikes me as very unusual in this, first of all, is that this president at Calvin College, and by the way, this was one of the venues for the debates for the campaign in 2000 when then Texas Governor George W. Bush stood on the same stage in a debate. But now he's going to be delivering the commencement address. And I can tell you that when an institutional president has to use this kind of rather apologetic language explaining why the president of the United States is appearing as the commencement speaker, something is wrong. And when you start looking at one-third of the faculty of an institution that calls itself, considers itself, and claims a Christian identity, something is going on here. David Crump, a professor of religion at the college for the last 8 years, in a report in the Free Press, says that he felt that he had to speak out even though he doesn't yet have tenure. He says he is concerned about the way that religious discourse in this country has been largely co-opted by the religious right and their wholesale endorsement of this administration, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This is what Dale Van Clee said, who was a history professor at Calvin for 28 years. He said, "I can see that the Bush administration is gaining capital from this appearance, but I don't see what it does for Calvin." That is Calvin College. Well, if you can't understand what it means for a college to have the President of the United States as a commencement speaker, how in the world did you get tenure in any university? How in the world did you fill out an application form? If you can't understand this, what do you understand? It is an amazing thing, and my guess is the White House regrets accepting this particular invitation, but it will be memorable. And I can just hope that the students observing President Bush learn the right lessons as they watch their faculty embarrass their institution. Well, the women in combat issue has arisen again, and for good reason. In the House of Representatives, there is now, among the House Armed Services Committee, action to limit explicitly by legislation the role of women in the military to prevent women from serving in frontline military units. Why would that be necessary, you ask? Your understanding and mine has been that women have been excluded from such service. That has been the stated policy of the Pentagon. But we now know that, words mean everything, don't they? If you can redefine words, you can redefine the reality. And that's what's happened. In Iraq, there are women who have been in the line of fire. Now, we've known that because we've had at least one or two taken hostage. They've been in the line of fire because they've been in logistics units and support units that have been allied to front units. And because of this, they've basically been at the front lines. This raises the whole issue as to whether there should be any discrimination at all, any distinction at all in the roles of men and women, for instance, in the armed services, in the Army in particular. And what you see on the secular left is the insinuation that any distinction here violates, well, you know, equality. It violates the fact that according to those on the secular left and those who follow their line of reasoning, there should be no distinction because any distinction is merely artificial and is oppressive. In the Seattle Post-Intelligencer, just on Wednesday, you have an editorial, "Facts About Women in Combat Elude the Right." This editorialist is suggesting that conservatives pay virtually no attention to reality. The reality of what women have risked, accomplished, and suffered since 9/11. Well, I have to say to Mr. Philip Gold and Aaron Solaro, those who wrote this column, that doesn't make any difference. No one is doubting that women can be noble and brave and courageous and have been so, not only since 9/11, but long before that. You take women out of civilization and civilization disappears. Civilization falls apart. But that does not mean that we should change our understanding of the very nature of women by putting them in frontline combat units. They go on to say that there has been no surge in pregnancies. Now, follow their logic here. They said the Pentagon refuses to release comprehensive statistics, but it's fairly certain that if there were an epidemic, somebody would have leaked it. Well, that's what you call putting your head in the sand, because the information is out, even though the Pentagon is refusing to give comprehensive statistics. And we know that a British force is in southern Iraq. 82 women were sent home in 2003 after discovering that they were pregnant. And there's no reason to believe it would be any different among Americans. And we do know that it has affected some fighting units, and especially in branches other than the Army, that has been made clear. According to the Washington Times and its reports, women who have voluntarily left the Army after becoming pregnant have ranged from 1,506 to 1998 to 1,698 last year. That's a lot. But the bigger issue to me is not just pregnancy, but what it would mean for this nation to put women in frontline combat units, what that would say about us, what that would say about our view of women, and what that would say about our view of the military. Speaking of the military, perhaps you have caught on to the controversy having to do with the Air Force Academy. That academy is under attack because of accusations of religious intolerance and an oppressive evangelical spirit on the campus. Now, I wanted to know what in the world is going on here, and I want to tell you in advance, I'm going to be at the Air Force Academy. I'm going to be there on the day of commencement in just about 10 days, and I will come back and give you a firsthand report of what's actually going on at the Air Force Academy. But like in so many controversies, one of our first questions should be, how did this arise, and who is framing the issue? Well, it arose because a group of pastoral counseling students, led by a professor from the Yale Divinity School, went to do a sexuality seminar and experience in terms of sexual harassment at the Air Force Academy, and they didn't like what they saw having to do with the religious spirit on the campus. Kristen Leslie, a professor at the Yale Divinity School, she headed that particular unit. She said this to CNN. She said, if someone comes up to them with more authority, this is cadets, even an older cadet, and says to them, we want you to be a Christian, get out of my face, is not one of the appropriate responses. She spoke about her Yale team seeing a fire and brimstone sermon, that's her characterization, given by an evangelical chaplain to more than 600 evangelical cadets. This is what she said. The chaplain who was there in the midst of the sermon exhorted his cadets that they needed to go back to their bunks and bear witness, to proselytize, to bring their bunkmates to become Christians, and if they didn't, and in fact, there would be consequences for them. She says, I was struck at how bold the evangelical conservative message was in that environment. Well, Professor Leslie, that's what evangelical Christianity looks like. You see, we're the people who believe that faith in the Lord Jesus Christ makes all the difference in the world. And I fail to see why anyone should be embarrassed or shocked, much less outraged, at seeing an evangelical chaplain speaking this way to evangelical cadets. Should we be surprised if a Jewish chaplain speaks in terms of Judaism to Jewish cadets? If a Catholic chaplain speaks in terms consistent with Catholic doctrine to Catholic cadets? You see, evangelizing is not something that is some kind of aggressive military move that the evangelicals have all of a sudden discovered at the Air Force Academy. It's the task the church has been given, Christians have been given, to share the good news. And Professor Leslie seems to be shocked that these students were told that there would be consequences. Well, these are eternal consequences, Professor Leslie. Well, she and her team released a report. It had just a few lines about this religious intolerance, as they characterized it, and the special interest group Americans United, which was formerly known as Americans United for Separation of Church and State, got on the story. It led to a firestorm in the media, and now you have government regulators, you have the Pentagon, you have Congress, and, of course, the secular media just going wild about this. And I'll be back in just a few days to tell you exactly what's going on at the Air Force Academy, because I want to see for myself. Because I know the noble spirit of that academy and of all of our service academies. And I can tell you one thing, we need to fight for the right of our cadets and our soldiers and sailors and armed services personnel, whatever uniform they wear, to be Christians in uniform. They did not forfeit their First Amendment freedoms when they signed on to put on the American uniform. We're going to be talking today about the right of pharmacists to exercise their own conscience. It's under attack in America, not only in the state of Illinois, which we'll be talking about, but perhaps in your city and community as well. If it's the pharmacist today, it could be you tomorrow. Stay tuned for a conversation that you won't want to miss. I'm Albert Mohler.
This is the best of the Albert Mohler Program.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. You know, in these days, it's entirely possible that most of us will face a situation in which we will either have to obey our conscience or obey the law. I'm sad to say that. I'm sorry to say that. I think it's a tragic reality. But Exhibit A comes right now in the form of pharmacists in Illinois. And all over the nation, many are being confronted with this issue. But Illinois is on the line in particular because Governor Rod Blagojevich there has set down an executive order saying that all pharmacies, and that's all pharmacists, have to dispense the morning after pill. And they have to do so regardless of their conscience. Now, let's just talk about this for a moment. Let's factor in what's going on here. This means that pharmacists, who are medical professionals in their own right, are now being told that they cannot act on the basis of their own conscience. Now, just remember, doctors are not required to perform abortions. The American Medical Association will protect the right of physicians to refuse to participate in abortions. But the morning after pill, RU486, or whatever you want to call it, mifepristone, is an abortifacient. It operates at least part of the time, if not most of the time, in preventing a fertilized egg from being implanted in the womb and growing through the gestational process all the way to birth. But the situation is now becoming acute in Illinois and in other parts of the country. Only four states offer a blanket exemption to pharmacists. Others have some partial exemptions. One pharmacist has actually been brought up in one location on charges that he refused to distribute the morning after pill. The pharmacists are contending for their right, those especially of pro-life convictions, not to distribute this drug or dispense it. And yet the feminists are on a rampage, and abortion rights folks understand that this is a do or die for them. And so they're going at it with a vengeance, going after physicians and going after this right. We need someone who can give us some real context in this. And the background, by the way, to our guest today is an editorial in the New York Times in which that paper, here's a big surprise, said that it really doesn't come down to the conscience of the pharmacist. The only issue is the conscience of the woman who comes to demand the morning after pill. Dr. Leonard Edlow is the president and CEO of Edlow's Professional Pharmacy in Richmond, Virginia, and he is also a pastor. He's pastor of the Antioch Baptist Church in Susan, Virginia. Dr. Edlow, welcome to the Albert Mohler Program.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
Listen, I have to tell you, I really loved your letter. Letter to the editor of the New York Times. I'm going to read it real quick. As a practicing pharmacist for 35 years, I was shocked by your stance, that's the newspaper stance, that any pharmacist who cannot dispense lawfully prescribed medicine should find another line of work. I am a professional, and I also have a conscience. I love especially, cutting to the end, what Dr. Edlow said. He said, I know also that one day I must answer to my Creator. I have chosen to practice a profession that improves the quality of life, and I believe that any action I take that causes death will have implications when I am judged for the things I have done on this earth. God bless you, Dr. Edlow. What prompted you to write that letter to the New York Times?
Well, I had, you know, naturally preached that day at church. My church is an hour and 20-minute drive. And I went to sleep when I got home. And when I woke up, I get the New York Times and Washington Post every day by email. And most of the time I just read the op-ed, because I happened to introduce Tom Friedman when he spoke in Richmond last year, but moralists in the pharmacy just stuck out in my face. And so I sat there, I prayed about it, I thought about it, and as you see, I took my time crafting what I would say, responding properly to what they had said, because it just, it's not only with this issue, but they are saying anything that I get, if it's written by a lawful physician, and written by a physician, I have to fill it.
You know,
a person's a dope addict, I have to fill it.
You know, that just boggles the imagination. I want to say, I don't think anyone could have said what you said more clearly. I think your words were just so well-crafted. When I saw your letter, I said to our producer, I said, we got to get this guy on the program because this pharmacist knows what he's talking about. Dr. Edlow, let me draw you a situation drawn from world history. Let's say that you were a pharmacist in Germany during the Second World War, and a fully licensed physician, Dr. Josef Mengele, for example, gave a prescription for something that would end the life of Jews, as he used his medical practice also to torture people, to do all kinds of things. I mean, I think most civilized people, Christian or otherwise, in this case, it's just most persons who have any sense of morality whatsoever would say that it would be immoral for a pharmacist to participate in the culture of death. But now we have Governor Blagojevich in Illinois saying that a pharmacist must actually participate with the morning after pill, even if he believes that it's the killing of an innocent human life. What do you make of this?
Thankfully, it's just for 150 days. The legislature has to act after that. But at 150 days, you know, I would be one who would just say no. I mean, and suffer the consequences. Because, you know, like you said, you bring up the issue in Nazi Germany. I mean, anyone who's looked at the Holocaust, a lot of things were done by people that just sat back and said, well, that's the status quo, we'll go along with it. And that's what's wrong in the country today. Nobody stands up for anything.
Well, you're certainly right about that. Dr. Edlow, what do you say to people who would argue, as the New York Times does and the Washington Post and Ellen Goodman and the Boston Globe this week, that the only issue here is the conscience of the woman, not the conscience of the pharmacist? You make the argument that you're a professional, you're not a robot, you're there because you're to exercise a professional responsibility.
Well, see, the problem comes in that most people really don't have a relationship with their pharmacist. You know, they just look at a person to come in, and I mean, we look at drugs almost like going to McDonald's. And so when you don't develop relationships with a person who's taking care of your health, I have to wonder what kind of relationship you develop with the person, say you may have sex with. There's no relationship there, and there's no, they don't think about it. It just happens, and then you come to me, and I'm supposed to correct your problem.
You know, Dr. Edlow, that is the bottom line of this, isn't it? I mean, the morning after pill is really, I want to have sex with whenever, under whatever circumstances, with whomever, and I don't want to face the consequences, the circumstances, the child that could, and pregnancy that could come. Isn't that the bottom line?
That's the bottom line. And the thing is, see, they use it on this issue. If you get over on this issue, then it goes to any and everything. And then we live in a real dangerous society. And, you know, everybody, we have to, you know, everybody has to balance their rights. And the thing is, you know, what I believe, and like I said at the end, I have to face my Creator. That is the ultimate right. I mean, that's forever.
Well, God bless you, Dr. Edlow. I'm thankful you've come on. Dr. Leonard Edlow is president of Edlow's Professional Pharmacies in Richmond, Virginia. He's also a pastor at Antioch Baptist Church in Susan, Virginia. And Dr. Edlow, you make me proud to be a Baptist. God bless you. Thank you so much for coming on the program today.
Thank you for having me.
You know, folks, this is an issue that's not just in Virginia, where Dr. Edlow practices. It's not just in Illinois, where Governor Blagojevich has set down this executive order. It's all over the United States of America. And if it's not being debated in your community, in fact, as a matter of fact, perhaps in your pharmacy, your local pharmacy, your drugstore at the corner, it's being debated all over this country. And you can see where the cultural elite is going. You can see where those who are committed to a pro-abortion position are going. You can see that they want to exclude the opportunity for Christian professionals, pro-life professionals, to say, I will not be complicit with the culture of death. That's the big issue here. All these pharmacists are saying is that they will not, cannot, in conscience, dispense RU486, the morning after pill. They cannot participate in a chemically induced abortion. They must recognize and honor the dignity and sanctity of human life. And in response comes an executive order from the governor of the state. Good, yes, for 150 days, but for 150 days until the legislature may act to say this is the way it is. It's political posturing from Governor Blagojevich, but it is a dangerous precedent that could affect the liberties of every single person of conscience in America. I wonder what you think about this. Perhaps you're a pharmacist, but beyond that, perhaps you just have a concern for what this means about our society today. What would you do if you were the pharmacist? Give me a call, 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. This is the Albert Mueller Program.
this is the best of the Albert Mohler program. We won't be taking your phone calls today, but stay tuned for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, welcome back to the Albert Mohler program. It's hard to believe that these pharmacists are being required, at least in Illinois, for now, by Governor Blagojevich to dispense the morning after pill, RU486, and abort a patient, regardless of their conscience. I never thought I would see some of these things happen in America, because you know that even as abortion has been a supposed right in all 50 states, it's been protected by the courts in subsequent decisions, there's been an allowance for doctors and for hospitals not to perform abortions. But no more, at least not when it comes to a chemically induced abortion in those states where pharmacists are required to dispense it regardless of conscience. I want to know what you think about it. The phone number 877-893-8255. We're going to go to Alan, listening on XM Satellite Radio in Orchard, Colorado. Alan, welcome to the program.
Do the pharmacies have to carry this drug?
Yes, that's exactly, at least in some states, and in particular in Illinois, what Governor Blagojevich has ordered. He says they have to carry it. They have to dispense it with any prescription. It is not a choice.
I don't see how they can force somebody to carry something that they, if they, in their own conscience, don't want to dispense.
Well, that's what's hard to believe, but actually they're using the licensure power of the state as the legal authority to do this because, you know, you can't just open a pharmacy on the corner. It has to be a licensed pharmacy, and they're using that mechanism. I agree with you. It shouldn't be that way. That's the whole reason for this conversation. I think it's an outrage. But I think the way you put it is exactly how Americans need to frame the issue. They're being told they have to carry this, and they have to sell it, and they have to dispense it. They even are being forced to do so regardless of conscience and regardless of their medical judgment that would come into this, not only with this drug, but as I'm sure will follow with others as well. Thanks for the call from Colorado. Let's go to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, where Sean's listening on XM Satellite Radio.
Yes, Mr. Mohler, thank you for taking my call. I like your other caller. You know, I want to know when we started living in a communist country, you know, a lot of American people died for us to have rights, you know, for us to have the freedoms that we have. And, you know, sit there and you can't force a gasoline, a convenience store to sell gasoline, nor can you force a grocery store to sell bread. So what rights does the government have in forcing an American company to sell something it doesn't believe in?
Well,
that sounds pretty communistic to me.
Yeah, I think it sounds totalitarian for sure. I think it sounds like an imposition and infringement of liberty that ought to have every American outraged. I think it is a curtailment and a violation of conscience that sets a precedent that could spread all throughout all professions. What about lawyers? What about physicians when it comes to abortion? You could just look down at an entire list of imaginable and very real conflicts of conscience that could come right out of this logic. Sean, thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Joe from Cincinnati, listening on WTSJ. Joe, welcome.
Yes, I'm Christian, and I'm against abortion, but I don't think they have the right to say that they can't provide this drug to people. I think it goes down a slippery slope. What happens if you get a person who has a drug, life-saving drug, but it's made from animals, and they want to say, you know, I don't think you should get this because I'm against using animals for testing or something like that. I don't think it's right that they have the authority to say I'm not going to dispense this drug, considering that it's legal. They got a prescription from the doctor, they should be able to get it.
Well, would you put any limitation at all on that, Joe? Let's go back to the analogy, a very real historical analogy of Nazi Germany, and let's say that a legal drug there was one that we would all know was immoral, being used to kill Jews, et cetera. I mean, at what point, or would you reach any point where you would say that conscience ought to apply?
I don't know that I've thought it through enough to answer your question properly. Just sitting in your car talking about it, I can see your point where you're saying, you know, as far as killing people or whatnot. But if something's legal, supposedly our FDA has, you know, gone through the process of approving the drug. How do you just say that they can't have it just based upon one pharmacy? What if you live in a town that you only have one pharmacy or something like that, and there's a drug that you need to have that some pharmacist says, well, my conscience, they just don't want to give it to you?
Yeah, well, I think that's the very logic that's being used explicitly by the editors of the New York Times, the Washington Post, and other newspapers to say that these pharmacists shouldn't have the right of conscience. But I got to come back around and say, I don't want to live in a country where they don't have that right. I don't want to live in a country. I don't want to be in a situation. I don't want to be satisfied with a legal regime that says that anyone has to participate in abortion. This makes us all complicit, even further complicit. You know, that's why Henry Hyde brought his very famous amendment so that federal funding wouldn't be used for abortion, so that taxpayers wouldn't have to be directly complicit in the culture of death. Doctors do not have to perform abortions, even though abortion is supposedly, according to the Supreme Court, a right. How then is it that pharmacists are told they must be abortionists by pill, by extension of their moral responsibility as professionals? I'll be right back. This is Albert Mohler.
This is the best of the Albert Mohler program.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, what would you do? What would you do if you were a pharmacist and in your state the governor set down an executive order saying that you must dispense RU486, the morning after pill, in abortive fashion? It causes an abortion in the womb. What would you do? What if your license is at stake, as it may be in Illinois? I'd love to hear from many of you who could put yourself in the position of being that pharmacist. This is one of those very real-life crises. This isn't some kind of values clarification experiment in some classroom somewhere. This is real life being lived out by these physicians. The number, 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Let me tell you that there is a fascinating news story from Decatur, Illinois. It's the governor of Illinois, Rod Blagojevich, who is setting down this policy, and already we're getting response from pharmacists. Pharmacist Jim Perry in Springfield, Illinois, has said that he's going to defy the order. He said, ordering me to do this would be like ordering all doctors to perform abortions. You just can't expect pharmacists to do this. Even more strongly worded came the response from Karen Brower, who is president of Pharmacists for Life. Listen to this. She said, I'm getting calls from pharmacists all over the country who say, I didn't get into this profession to kill babies. She contends that Governor Blagojevich's action is illegal because Illinois law already allows healthcare providers to opt out. That is, to opt not to do procedures their consciences object to. The statute specifically covers physicians and nurses, and the Illinois Pharmacist Association contends that the broader language in the law also covers pharmacists. And listen to this. This is from Karen Brower, president of Pharmacists for Life. She said, quote, the problem is the governor can't read, and he's going to get sued over this, and he's going to be embarrassed all because he can't read. I want her on my side. Well, how long is it, if you extend the logic that the governor is using, until hospitals are told they must perform abortions? Before doctors are told they must perform abortions? Because the logic is exactly the same. What you read in the editorial in the New York Times, what you read from columnists like Ellen Goodman and others is, hey, if pharmacists are not required to do this, if they can opt out by conscience, then the morning after pill won't be available in this location. Well, abortion's not available in many locations. For good reason. Even though it is a right, supposedly, it's not any right you'll find in the Constitution, and it's morally wrong, but the Supreme Court says it's a right, but you know what? The Supreme Court has not gone so far as to require that every hospital and every physician perform abortions. But Governor Blagojevich of Illinois says every pharmacist must become involved in the culture of death, by extension, kill babies with chemicals with the morning after pill. Let's go to Iowa, where Steve's called. Welcome to the program, Steve.
Thank you.
Go right ahead.
Well, I work for the Department of Corrections in Iowa, and we disperse meds to men and women. And if a woman came up to me and said she wants her medication and the morning after pill or anything else that causes death to an innocent baby, I would refuse, and I would take whatever discipline, and I would just say, well, whatever God wants me to work next, that's where I'll work. But I would fight to as far as I could, and I know that my union would not probably back me up on this.
Well, Steve, God bless you. I think that's the kind of conviction that's going to be required if we're going to face this thing down in Nut Cave. We're going to have to say, just like this pharmacist, Jim Perry in Springfield, just like Karen Brower of Pharmacists for Life, we're going to have to be willing to say, we're not going to do this, no matter what the governor may say. Even if it's illegal to refuse to do it, I'm not going to do it, because there is a higher law than the law of man. And this is one of those big questions we face on this program again and again. When is it lawful to disobey the law of the land, to disobey the authorities over us? It's when we will be called to do and required to do that which is clearly immoral, murderous. In this case, the morning after pill, which causes an abortion in the womb. I think the whole sex-crazed society reaches its nadir, its bottom, its low point, when for the sake of sexual licentiousness, sexual promiscuity, and sexual convenience, pharmacists are being told they must do this. And it's being packaged as a woman's right to receive this pill to prevent that fertilized egg within her from implanting in the womb and moving through gestational stages to fullness of infant life. It's human life, ladies and gentlemen, from beginning to end. It's human life once that egg is fertilized. Veronica's calling from Tampa, listening on WTBN. Veronica, welcome.
Hi.
Go right ahead. We're glad to hear from you.
Okay. I just wanted to say that I'm just outraged by this. I think that we're no longer the land of the free, or at least for us as Christians. For liberals, I think so, but not for us as Christians. To be forced to have to be an active participant in abortion, I just think I'm just outraged by it.
Well, I share your outrage, Veronica. I only wish more people were outraged, because if enough people in Illinois were outraged, Governor Blagojevich would pay a penalty for this. And he wouldn't get away with this. And I hope that outrage gets to the Illinois legislature right fast, very speedily, because we need to stop this thing in its tracks before it becomes the law of the land in Illinois. And I am with Karen Brower. I hope that the governor is humiliated by this. I hope he's embarrassed. I hope he is sued. And I hope what he gets back is a rebuke from the legal authorities to say, you exceeded your authority, you violated conscience, and this is not going to stand. Thanks for your call, Veronica. Very quickly, we're going to go to Texas, where Sherry is listening on XM. Sherry, go right ahead.
Yeah, thank you. I think we all need to...
So, well, we just lost Sherry. But that's one of the problems sometimes with a call-in show. It's only as good as the phone line. But the point is always that we have to focus on what's under the surface issue. What's on the surface issue that the press would give us is that this is about a woman's right to a drug. But what this is about, as a deeper issue, as a worldview issue, is the right of an individual to refuse to cooperate with the culture of death, to refuse to participate in the culture of abortion. We're going to go to Ryan from Louisville, Kentucky. Ryan, go right ahead.
Hi there, Dr. Moore. I love your program. I just wanted to elaborate on a little bit what you had touched on earlier. I don't see how these pharmacists can be subject to mandate that they have to provide this pill, because I know firsthand, for working for an insurance company that will remain nameless, that I answer questions for Catholic healthcare providers in Illinois, and obviously they do not do abortions. They don't have to because of their convictions with their faith. And if that's the case, then how can you make pharmacists do the same? It seems inconsistent, you mentioned earlier.
Ryan, you got a major problem, and that is you're a man of logic, that you're a man who thinks clearly. Because Governor Blagojevich has handed down this executive order without regard for the logical implications. It is an immoral act. It's an immoral executive order. It puts pharmacists in an immoral position. Ladies and gentlemen, we cannot become complicit with a culture of death without answering, just as Dr. Edlow said, without answering to our Creator, a higher law, a higher license. I'll be back with some higher thoughts. This is Albert Mohler.
This is the best of the Albert Mohler program.
So what now? Isn't that the question? I mean, now that we know about this, what are we going to do about it? Let me suggest a couple things to you in terms of concrete responses to a challenge like this. Number one, support your local pharmacist. Support his or her right not to violate conscience in medical practice. Understand that pharmacists are medical professionals. They have to have advanced training in pharmaceuticals, and they have to be licensed by the state. They are professional people, and by definition, a professional is one who applies wisdom, professional judgment to a situation. And you know what? Conscience is at the very heart of character. And a part of being a human being, and a part of understanding what liberty and freedom is God's gift to every human being, is understanding that conscience is at the heart of it. You know, this country recognizes conscientious objectors who will not fight. I think they're wrong, but, you know, I can consider contexts in which it would be right to disobey an order. if that order was to kill or to torture or to do something that was clearly immoral. Doctors and hospitals are not required to perform abortions. And you can imagine that there would be a hue and cry if that ever were to happen. But you can see it in terms of a creeping logic coming along. You can see it in terms of a Catholic charity in California that is forced to offer insurance coverage to its employees that includes contraceptives and other forms of medical treatment that would include abortifacients. And you can see it in Governor Blagojevich's action in Illinois requiring physicians, at least for the duration of his executive order, requiring pharmacists to dispense RU-46, the morning after pill. You can imagine that he got a lot of kudos and backslapping and applause from the feminists and from the pro-abortion advocates, but where is the outrage from the Christian community? And let me ask something else. Where's the outrage from the professional associations of pharmacists? Where are the deans of the pharmacy school saying, I'm going to speak up for my profession? Even if they're not Christians, should not they be required and expected to speak up for the liberty of conscience for those who are? You know, who's next? What profession? What drug? What atrocity is next that will be foisted on persons? And in the name of a woman's right to choose, in the name of a woman's absolute sovereignty, it is claimed over her reproductive capacity. What next? It is truly a frightening thought, and we're likely to know sooner rather than later, because what we are seeing is a circling of the forces. We're seeing a gathering of the clouds. We are seeing the issues coming together. And I'm not paranoid, and I don't want you to be paranoid. But we need to be alert, educated. We need to be thoughtful. We need to be ready to respond. And we need to understand that something like this that takes place in the state of Illinois is not just about one state. It's about this entire country. And what this has to say about one profession is immediately transferable to other professions as well and to all of us. For I believe what I said at the beginning of this program is fundamentally true. We're all going to have to give an answer for the conscience and to a higher law, to the law of God. Be back tomorrow for Ask Anything Wednesday. Get ready with your call. You'll set the agenda. We'll meet here. See you then.
Thanks for listening. And be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows, Dr. Moeller's daily crosswalk commentary, and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Moeller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.